Glory to podcast kind. This is the Awesome Cast. Hey, folks, and welcome back to the Awesome Cast, your podcast for everything awesome. I'm Basil.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Douglas.
And that's us. Yes, we're back. We've had a crazy couple of weeks in a very crazy world.
2020 in general is having a weird one, so.
But I'm glad we're here. I'm glad we're talking. It's good to talk to both of you. And I also want to, up top, give some shout-outs to some Patreons that we now have. In case you haven't heard, because we usually say it at the end of the episode, the AwesomeCast, we do have a Patreon. It literally is just a, hey, if you like us, please do, give us a support. Our cat would also love it if you would give us some support. And we recently got a couple of Patreons by Ink and Vinny. Ink from as a partner of Jared over at Anagamers for the All Taku No Radio podcast, and Vinny's part of All Geeks Considered, and they recently subscribed to us on the Patreon. So, man, thanks, y'all.
Awesome.
So, yeah, thank you, Vinny and Ink, and also, of course, Dylan and Charlie, who they're also patrons, but they're also members of the Awesome Cast. But if you'd like to, help support us. Of course, our website is awesomecast.com, OSMCAST.com, and you can find all the links to like Apple Podcasts, and you can find us on Stitcher. And honestly, if you don't want to spend money on us, I get it. It's a crazy time. We totally appreciate it if you do. Anything to help is always great and appreciated. You could also share the show with your friends or give us like 5-star reviews. That way other people can find us too, and that's super, ultra, mega useful.
And, enough people subscribe on our Patreon, we might actually have to think of benefits to that, like, getting us to review specific things or something.
It's true. The sky's the limit. I mean, especially if people start, dumping money on us. Well, I'll review anything, honestly, if you pay me.
Yeah.
So, anyways, you can find us there, but we know that you're here for us to talk about things that we find awesome, so let's do it. Let's get on with some Moments of Awesome.
It's a Moment of Awesome!
All right, folks, what you got?
Well, there's a show on Netflix that I basically just discovered that's, it's called Norsemen.
Oh my gosh, I've seen that! Okay, answer my question about this, Kevin. What language is it in?
Yes. Well, it's English and Norwegian, but I think it's the same cast.
Well, okay, because here's the thing. I watched it really late at night while I was having a trouble sleeping one night.
Yeah.
And when I woke up the next morning, I couldn't remember what language it was in.
Yeah, I don't. There is a Norwegian language version, and all the actors are Norwegian, but they also did it in English, and that's the version on Netflix.
Okay.
And it's basically just a Viking sitcom.
Yeah.
That's all the humor basically runs on. This is how Vikings were, even if some of the situations are slightly weird.
I thought it was a little bit like The Office, in that its format is a mockumentary-like style.
Yeah, yeah.
It's acting as though it's reality TV, but of course, it's about Vikings, so it's all scripted.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got 3 seasons. The 3rd season just showed up on Netflix, and it's actually a prequel to the first 2 seasons, although it weirdly makes a nice little circle. But, it's the humor is often very dry and sometimes even, abrasively so. and it doesn't necessarily shy away from brutal violence, but that's also not really the focus either. But, you know, it's Vikings just kind of being Vikings, and it's just a bunch of weird people who, you know, you got brave warriors and the weird effeminate weirdo and the tough shield maiden lady who's like the coolest character in the show. the crazy neighboring Jarl who is legitimately insane. And just, you know, shenanigans ensue. And it's just shockingly entertaining. Like, when it puts a ridiculous amount of dramatic weight on very silly events.
The mime bit was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and it's fairly authentically Viking, which is the most amusing part. That's, you know, that sometimes mean they're absolutely terrible people behaving in exactly what is their cultural norm. It's like, when it makes me laugh, I just am laughing my head off. So that's something I just watched like yesterday and today, basically. So it's like, I don't know if in a month I'll be like, man, why was I so excited about Norsemen? But right now I'm hyped on Norsemen.
Well, that's sort of the same way everybody was so hyped on Tiger King for a little while there.
Which I never got into myself, but that's, yeah, I kind of get that.
I'm not going to talk about it, but I feel like for the anime community, Decadence, I think right now, especially for the first two episodes, feels very Tiger King, where everyone feels like everyone should be watching those first two episodes, just so you can talk about those first two episodes.
Yeah. It's a weird little show. I that's what I really want to know, where the heck is it going? It could end terribly, and I still may have enjoyed the ride.
No, that's a show that I feel that we can't really talk about until we can talk about, like, all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Suffice it to say, it's one of the few shows. I think it was, oh, what was that stupid show about space vampires?
Oh, Valbrave?
Yeah.
Valbrave.
Like, yeah. It's the first show since, like, Valbrave, where I'm like, okay, I'm signed on to this show. I don't know if you can stick the landing, but I'm on board. Now, I will say, I think how they're handling Decadence so far, I think they might actually do it. I don't want to say they're going to do it, but they might. Because it feels like this show actually has some thought put into it. Unlike Valvrave, which they really, I think, were making it up as they went along and then forgot they needed to actually make something up that was good.
Yeah.
Whereas Decadence, I do feel like it is. It seems like they know kind of what they're going for. And everything seems to, like, once you get to the moment, it seems like everything is working as intended. So here's hope. That's not what I want to talk about. Yeah, Decadence is cool. But I want to talk about a couple of mangas. I want to talk about Magu-chan, God of Destruction. It is a new Shonen Jump manga from Kei Kamiki. It is about Magu-chan, who is this ancient eldritch god of destruction, who got sealed up many eons ago by his RPG heroes. And now they have been unleashed upon the world again by this young middle schooler named Ruru. Only it's been eons, so Magu is now very, very tiny and very, very cute and can rain destruction a little bit, but not a lot of it. And now has to be friends with this girl, this little girl who just needs a friend. And so now what happens, you know, when Magu now needs, like, you know, offerings, aka food. And Ruru's like, well, I've got this Natto. And Magu's like, what is Natto? And then Magu-chan decides, okay, this is pretty good. Because their joke is, it's an old man. Because it's ancient, you know, eons old. So of course they like Natto. Yeah, Natto. I cannot pronounce words. But, or, like, Magu-chan now has to, you know, brave, like, I don't know, the convenience store. Only Magu is not heavy enough to, you know, get into the store. The sensor won't read. So Magu just wants to lay waste to the convenience store. But Magu must purchase things from the convenience store. So that is a destroy or do what Magu actually needs to do, or else Ruru will get mad. So it's super cool. It's super cute. And then the other manga I want to talk about, this one's actually by Ryuhei Tamura, who also did Beelzebub. But this one is called Hard Boiled Cop and Dolphin. And it's about this very, very hard-boiled cop who is like, he doesn't play by the rules, or he plays by the rules, but not the rules that anyone wants him to play by. Like, this is the kind of guy who will be like, ah, you're trying to rob this convenience store. Awesome. I'm going to shoot your ass with my gun because I'm a cop and that's what cops do to protect the world. And, well, everyone's like, okay, you're way too hardcore, guy. This is Japan.
Like, dude, read the room. Haven't you seen the protests?
Yeah, okay, so we're going to send you to these remote Ogasawara Islands, and you can deal with this stuff. And so he gets there, and he's just like, grr, I'm so gruff and hard-boiled, I just want to stop some crime. And then he meets this little girl who has apparently been rescued from this ocean cult. And then he meets his partner who is legit a dolphin man who is, you know, bipedal man who also has a head of a dolphin and is buff as hell. And he is the surrogate father of this young girl who really wishes she would just love on him more because he wants to be a good dad. But he's also like, all right, hardcore, all right, cop, we're going to deal with ocean crime. And, you know, hard-boiled cop guy's like, what the hell do you mean by ocean crime? And stuff happens. It looks very realistic, yet it's got ocean people doing ocean crimes. And he's not quite sure why he's dealing now with animal people and ocean crime. But damn it, he's a cop and he's going to do his job.
That just sounds weirdly charming.
It is. It really is. All right, Doug, what you got?
Okay, what I've decided to go with, because I don't think I've talked about it, is there's new expansions that came out for the Pokemon Sword and Shield games.
Oh, that already happened?
Well, the first one has.
The first one is out. The Isle of Armor expansion. And it's pretty awesome. They included a whole bunch of old Pokemon that are now you can bring them into the Galar region. They've got Pokemon Home up and running, so you can switch your Pokemon from previous games and actually store them and move them into this game finally. And you get the plot sort of centers around you get a new legendary Pokemon that's called Kubfu, but depending on whether you choose to ascend the stairs of darkness or the stairs of water, when it evolves into Urshifu, it'll either be a fighting water or a fighting dark type, which isn't really that remarkable. We have plenty of both of those, so it's really just kind of whatever you want to fit in your team. I've been playing a lot of Pokemon because I have nieces and nephews that are right at the prime age to think I'm super cool for playing Pokemon.
Yeah.
But this has led me to another thing, which is, I don't know if you guys have ever talked to, like, 15, 16-year-old boys about Pokemon. Nothing makes you feel like a bigger nerd. Nothing. You know, one of the 15-year-old boys I talked to, he was the grandson of my mother's boyfriend who passed away. And I was talking to him about I was talking to my niece and nephew about Pokemon, and he was just happened to be sitting around, and they went the little kids went off to go be little kids, and so he just had like a few more questions about how into it I was, and he kind of took the attitude of, well, you know, it's pretty cool that you've got something that you're passionate about and that you're still doing, and that now it's kind of paying off in that you're really getting to relate to this younger generation. It's really cool. But then I talked to my dad's wife's grandson, and It also came up in context of, you know, she was asking me what I've been doing lately, and I was telling her, well, I've been playing Pokemon, trying to get Pokemon for my niece, my 7-year-old nephew, and my 9-year-old niece. And so he had a few questions about, like, what made a Pokemon a legendary versus what made it rare, and I had answers for him. Like, I actually answered these questions. And by the time I was done answering these questions, I just felt like such a huge nerd. And he kind of made fun of me a little bit for it.
This is when you should have beat him up and stuffed him in a locker.
Well, I mean, 16-year-old boy. Of course he's going to be rude. I mean, I think that's like peak asshole.
Well, if it helps anyways, my 20-year-old coworker would just tell me that Pokemon's lit and awesome. And how baller is Pikachu anyways. So, I'll just say, like, you know, it's definitely an all-ages game.
Well, but yeah, that's why I've been playing a lot of Pokemon lately. It's pretty awesome. I think everybody pretty much acknowledges that Pokemon is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I will eventually get into the Isle of Armor. Right now, I'm still neck deep into playing through Xenoblade Definitive.
Oh, poop. I need to finish that up.
I'm past the marsh. I've done it.
That is the roadblock. That is, like, legit the roadblock in that game.
I know I've told this story to people at person. I've never said on the podcast, but I remember getting the game in a former fashion when the European version came out on the Wii through an emulator, totally legitimately, just to see if I needed to import it, because it seemed really cool. And the emulator kind of fried right when I got to the marsh. So I went, well, I'm enjoying this game. Oh, hey, they just announced it's coming out in America. Cool. I'll stop this playthrough. Then I get it on Wii, put it in my Wii, and I play it. I get to the marsh, and honestly, I step in, and then something catches like my attention on some other video game, and I stop playing it, and we're like, oh, I should go back to that at some point. I'll get to it one day. Then it comes out on 3DS. I'm like, you know what? I'll buy it on 3DS. I'll play it on 3DS. I love playing RPGs on portable systems. I play it. I'm having fun. It's kind of not really good on 3DS, but I'm still enjoying myself because it's a good game. And then I get to the marsh. And I'm like, all right, going to beat the marsh this time. And then I get distracted. And I'm like, you know what? I'll get back to this later. Then I'm like, no, I'm not. No, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, they'll put it on Switch. And then like a year later, they announce it for Switch. And I was like, oh gosh, this game looks really pretty on Switch. I played through 2. I beat the hell out of 2. I love Xenoblade 2. There is no reason I should not love Xenoblade 1. I loved playing it up until I got to the marsh. So I get the good new version, the remastered version, the definitive edition. It looks very pretty. Many times I'm like, how the hell is this game originally from Wii? Then there are times where I'm like, oh, this game is totally originally on a Wii. But I got to the marsh. I played through the marsh. I'm now well past through the marsh. I'm in Sword Valley now. Everything's a pumping, a thumping. I'm going to kill myself some Mechon. It's going to be great. And so I've got to keep playing that game. But the game I played before I started playing Xenoblade Definitive was another game where it's an interesting take on humanity and machines. And what is it really like to be alive? And that's the actual subject of this podcast, Nier Automata.
Yeah.
So, back in the day, and by the day, I mean 2003, 2004, there was this game called Drakengard. It was published by Square Enix. It was developed by a group called Cavia. And I remember looking at the back of the box on the PS2. This is back during the days of Rhino Video Games was a thing. And I'm like, oh shoot, this game looks like it's kind of like part Dynasty Warriors and part Panzer Dragoon slash like Star Fox, like where you're flying a dragon and killing stuff. I love the concept of flying a dragon and killing stuff. So I bought it. And I put it in my PS2, and I was not prepared. I was not prepared one iota. A, I didn't realize that Cavia made really neat games that were jank as all hell.
That is kind of their thing.
Two, I didn't know about this new story guy named Yoko Taro, and I didn't realize that he was making a game where people who were down on their luck make packs with dragons, and then things go bad very fast.
Yeah, he doesn't really do the bright and cheery stories.
And so, Drakengard kept on going. There's actually three of them, but also on the Xbox 360 and PS3, there was this game that's actually an offshoot based off a random ending that's not the canonical ending of Drakengard, but it's like an optional ending, and this game's called Nier. Also a Yoko Taro Cavia joint, although apparently this was also the last game Cavia made. Yeah. And this game was like way weirder than Drakengard was.
That's not a low bar.
I never actually played Nier. Kevin, did you play Nier 1, the original Nier?
I never finished it, which is sort of sad. I'm looking forward to that promised remake in the future.
The new one they're doing it, because in Japan, there actually is actually two versions of it. Gestalt and another Replicant. Replicant, that's right. Because they had a big burly dude or a nice Bishonen guy, and we just got the burly dude who was the which was one of the character's dads versus the character's older brother.
Yeah.
And a weird offshoot ending of Nier is the setting for Nier Automata, which is the game which we played and are talking about now.
I think the official ending of Nier is, in this case, what leads into Nier Automata, whatever the title of this game is.
Right. So, this game, Nier Automata, was developed by Platinum Games because they wanted to work with Yoko Taro, who is the director and main scenario writer. And it was also partially produced by Eijiro Nishimura, who is an animator for lots of Platinum's games, specifically for like Bayonetta 1 and 2. And Platinum Games is a bunch of folks that used to work for like Seeds and Capcom, people like Shinji Mikami, Hideki Kamiyama. They were originally, a lot of them were from Clover, who made stuff like, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the cool Fox Spirit game, Okami.
Oh, yeah.
And God Hand and all sorts of cool stuff. The first Devil May Cry. So they make just awesome playing video games. And so suddenly, Nier Automata is like this marriage of Yoko Taro's awesome but crazy game directing, but Platinum making good ass games. So now we've got this really good Nier game. And that's already weird.
Yeah. I also have to say, my action games have been so much almost exclusively Platinum in recent years that almost everyone else's games controls feels too janky for me if it's an action game. Because Platinum games just play that smoothly.
So, yeah, this game is good. I honestly may even think this game might be the game of this console generation.
Yeah, you need to play this game. You need to play this game. You might think that you don't need to play this game, but you need to play this game.
You, even if your friends have to prod you to remember, oh yeah, you never finished that game, and you really need to.
This is one of those things where, shout-outs to Tobias from Third Impact Anime, who pretty much said, hey, Basil, play Nier. And I went, hey, Tobias, buy me Nier. Next thing I know, 20 minutes later, hey, Basil, I bought you Nier. You better play it.
Yeah, that's usually a pretty good clue that it's a really good game, is when other people are willing to not just recommend it to you, but buy it for you.
And so Tobias was totally welcome to get on this episode, but he has yet to finish Nier.
What?
Automata. So Tobias, finish Nier.
What?
And then we'll delete our podcast to help finish yours. Wait.
No, Kevin, come on. That's too soon. Too soon. Come on. We're not
too
even.
Too soon.
So, yeah. Also, I should also point out the music was done by Keiichi Okabe, who has worked on things like the Tekken series. He's also helped work on music on Star Driver and the Garo series. Also formed the studio Monaka, who also is a part of Keigo Hoeshi, who worked on things like Yuki Yuna as a Hero and Conger Evolutio. And they're some of the people that are credited mostly for a lot of the music in the various Nier games, specifically Nier Automata. It was also localized by 8-4. Check out their podcast, 8-4 Play. They're awesome folks. They have localized a lot of the Tales series, like, for example, Tales of Vesperia. And they also localized, you know, the first Nier game as well. So they're awesome folks. And of course, I should also say the game is, you know, produced by Yosuke Saito. He has produced pretty much all the Nier games. He also produced Dragon Quest XI and a bunch of other Enix games. And he's apparently one, Yokotaro likes him because he's easy to get along with. And even though Saito has constantly pushed Yokotaro to do interviews and things, he at least let Yokotaro wear a mask. Okay, so what is Nier Automata? Well, many, many years in the future, humanity has almost died and now hides out in a remote base on the moon because aliens attacked. So now we may combat androids who fight for us. Yet the aliens have also made these machine robots that also fight. And so now our androids are fighting the alien machine. And yes.
And yeah, Earth is the battlefield.
When I first heard that this game was androids versus robots, I sat there and went, oh God, Japan has forgotten what robots are again. But but that is not the case. They are very much aware of what of the difference between a robot and a human. In fact, it's very possible in this game to accidentally suicide yourself and cause a game over by just unequipping the chip that has your operating system in it.
Yeah, you gotta leave that in there.
Like, you can't just pull that out.
Or eating a fish will also do it.
The right fish.
You're a robot. You don't have a stomach.
Like, the fish that could be given to you by another robot or android named Jackass.
That's your first clue. But the androids are very human-looking, whereas the machine life forms are weirdly very robot toy looking, like old school like robot toys.
So you play as 2B, this very nice looking android, and you also hang out with her newly found buddy 9S, who is a scanner robot who is supposed to be more like more covert. They tend to go out and literally scan or advance troops to, you know, hunt and not hunt, but like scope out things.
Basically, yeah. She's the big titty goth girlfriend, and he's the cool slick hacker boy.
Sort of, yeah. he's more your electronic warfare type. He's not. He can fight, but yeah, that's not his main thing.
And also, Tupi also has a very nice butt. Thank you very much.
True. That is fact. I mean, I'm sure you almost have to have seen somebody cosplaying her or fan art of her. She's been pretty popular.
Japan loved her dress. Her dress has become pretty prolific in a lot of Japanese, like, pop culture stuff. So yeah. I'm sure if you're a fan of Japanese pop culture, you've probably seen this dress crop up.
I honestly, all the playable characters in this game are ridiculously hot. So, you know.
Well, because
they're Yoko Taro is a... They're built to be perfect, and so they are.
And Yoko Taro is the kind of guy where I'm pretty positive he went, look, people want to play with hot characters. I want my game to make money. So let them play with the hot characters. This is the guy that this game almost didn't happen because he refused to go into work on time. Because, you know, Platinum Games started their day at 9:30 a.m., and, quote, as a freelancer, I can't wake up that early. So we actually had 1 month. We were constantly arguing about it. And Nier Automata actually was about to be canceled because their start time was so early for me. And that's actually not a joke. But then the guy in the interview, then, well, Taro says, but at Platinum Games, they now actually have what's called, quote, free time. It's like a rolling schedule where you can come in whenever you like. So we don't have that issue anymore. AKA, they went, oh, fine, Yoko Taro, just comment when you can, so we can then work on it. So,
sounds like they changed their scheduling for him.
Yes.
Which is hilarious.
Now, this is one of those things where this game, I think it's really, really interesting, because, back in Dragon Guard, where they had different forms of combat, where you honestly had this Dynasty Warriors type game where you're just going through hundreds of troops, and then you had these sections that was a flying shooter like Panzer Dragoon or Star Fox. Well, Nier Automata does the same thing, only with, like, way more grace.
This game cannot decide what genre it is. It moves very, very quickly and very beautifully between being one of those old-school 2D scrolling shooters to a 3D platformer to a more modern hack-and-slash kind of fighter. Yeah, and then back around, and it's still an RPG all the way through, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and you'll also spend a lot of time playing a twin-stick shooter with it, too.
Yes.
But it jumps around genre a good bit. And, you know, I love every time you get the flying armor because, one, it's a cool robot suit. But, you know, so it's like, oh, hey, this reminds me of, you know, the scrolling shoot 'em up games I actually liked.
I think the hacking portrays itself typically as a 2D, as a two-stick shooter.
Yeah.
But not always. Sometimes it changes.
Because they wouldn't want you to get too comfortable with the mechanics at any given point.
Well, this is very much a game where just when you've gotten a little too comfortable with how the game's doing, it changes things up on you.
Here's a curveball. Oh, you were anticipating that curveball? Here's a slow ball.
It's true. Like, just when you think you've got a handle on it, it messes with stuff. Like, it's a really interesting game in that respect. And, like, so, you know, sometimes you think you've got, all right, I've got a handle on this 3D combat. Wait, no. Now they're focusing this game as a 2D game. Now you're playing Castlevania for a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, just so you thought this game couldn't get weirder. Here, have a big, like, thing where you didn't expect robots to be doing this, did you? But they're doing it.
Oh gosh. Yeah, the robots do a bunch of weird stuff, but that feels like, to really talk about that, we're starting to get into, like, little bit, because you said you wanted to talk about this in three sections, so.
Yeah. Right, so the focus of this game, just so y'all know, and this is also similar to what happened with the first Nier, you're actually meant to play this game multiple times. And each time you play it, you get a different perspective of what was going on. So for our spoiler section, we're actually going to do that too. So we're about to take a small break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the first playthrough, then the second playthrough, then the third playthrough. So we'll be right back, and this is the Awesome Cast. And we're back.
There's humans on the moon. They carry a harpoon. They're live and well, and they tell tall tales, and they sing this wailing tune.
Okay, so playthrough one, you're playing as 2B. You've got your little buddy 9S, who doesn't want to admit that 2B's hot, but we all know this. This isn't news, but much like Kevin said, everyone's hot in this game, so it's fine. Their job is they need to get onto Earth from the moon where their base is, and they need to go hook up with like this group of rebels, resistance that are other androids that are also sort of fighting the fight on the planet so they can kill themselves some machines.
Yep. Nine. Yeah.
The machines, I remind you, are made by the invading aliens who have nearly wiped out humanity.
Yeah. 2B's storyline is probably the most straightforward, at least from her point of view. That's just a basically go around and kill things, stop things, fetch quest things.
And so I remember when the game really got me was I was exploring stuff and it was cool. And I kind of go through this part of this desert area, but I couldn't get too far. And so eventually I do find the resistance camp, and then they send me out to the desert. That's when you meet Jackass, who is another Yorha, which is like the army for mankind. Your androids fighting for humanity, because humanity cannot fight for themselves. And they're like, hey, and you get, and you fight, start talking to, seeing these robots. And up until now, these robots did not talk. They just were running around killing stuff. And now they're saying things. And that's when 9S goes, no, don't worry. They're not really humans or anything. They're just saying stuff. they're nobodies. It's fine. They're heartless. Yeah. It's fine. You just kill them.
It very much has the nobody problem of, they may look and act like they have emotions, but don't be fooled. It's just a trick. And fortunately, this game is sophisticated enough that the fact that it sets you on edge about that is very much intentional.
So it really reminds me of this manga. It's called An Invitation from a Crab by Hanpaya. It's published by Denpa. And the whole idea about it is that it's a bunch of little short stories. And one of the stories, the main character is chopping up fish in a fish market. And the fishes, every time the character strikes, goes, ow, don't hurt me. I have a family. And like the fish owner, the guy who was super, like, don't worry. That's just gas expelling from the body as you're cutting through them. And then the character's like, and the fish is like, I'm dead. / ow. And it's just like, this is weird. Which I think it was the point. Same thing. For Nier, like, you know, these machines are like, hello, konnichiwa, hi, how are you? Or, danger, I'm scared, please don't kill me, I'm scared. And you keep going through this stuff, and eventually you end up in this really pretty but ransacked, like, old apartment complex that's just been destroyed by the elements. And you keep chasing after this machine life form, then next thing you know, like, you're more and more and more coming after you, and then they suddenly jump off of you, all sort of weird, congeal themselves, and these are metallic metal things, yet they they start piling into each other. It's almost like they congeal into this big ball, and they explode. And next thing you know, you've got your silver-haired, Bishonen buff, pretty boy antagonist, who is also a Ken doll, and is sort of just standing there.
Yep. Silver-haired, pretty boy antagonist. I felt, just upon first viewing, I felt it was very much like the robots were trying to make their own version of the androids, which is weird that they would do that.
But this is, and then you have to fight him, because otherwise the game will not move forward, but you have to fight him. You have to initiate combat.
Yeah, because he won't attack you till you attack him. In fact, he's actually pretty awful about attacking you at first.
He is, but that's kind of whole, you know, how it's using gameplay to sort of tell a story, where as you fight him, he's really bad at first, but he levels up pretty fast. And then next thing you know, you kill him, and out of him comes yet another silver-haired pretty boy, and then things start going to crap, and you gotta run off. And now we got our main villains, Adam and Eve.
Yep.
Turns out it's not Adam and Steve, but Eve was a guy anyways.
Yeah. Or not. I mean, they're machines. It's
true.
Like, it is one of those things where it's like, are we, what, does it really matter?
Is it sad that I've dived into supplemental material enough to find out, at least with the Yorha androids, genitalia is optional, but many of them opt for it.
Yeah, that's weird. That's weird, A, that they would opt for it. B, that it exists. Like that it exists is not as weird as the fact that they would opt for it.
There is some background chatter that suggests some of the androids are romantically involved with each other.
Well, yeah.
But still, that does speak to a interesting level of complexity to the androids.
And so things continue on, and you also meet, like, and I'm pretty sure after this is when you also, and what really was like, okay, I legit did not expect this at all. Like, otherwise, so far, it's been weird, but okay, no. I can see this in a Yoko Taro game. I played the first Dragon Guard. This all tracks. Then you go to the amusement park.
The robots in the amusement park are so fucking weird. Literally. Like, there's a bunch of them that are simulating reproduction. Only they're, like, toy robots. So it's like banging two Ken dolls together.
No, that was still in the desert.
Was it?
Yeah, when you get to the very bottom of the desert, there is like 20 or 30 different of the machine robots, all doing different things to try and imitate humanity.
Oh, I know why I got confused. Is because at the amusement park, there's a whole bunch of them that are going on and on and on about Romeo and Juliet, and that's weird.
Well, that's it. In this amusement park, there's a bunch of, you know, robots just having fun, but there's also, like, tourists. And, like, you know, carnival workers. And then you have to kill, like, a giant tank, but it's, like, shooting confetti. And it ends up, you end up having to fight, like, this gigantic machine life form opera singer.
Oh, yeah.
And then you go and you meet Pascal, who is a machine life form pacifist, who has a pacifist machine village. And that's when you realize that, you know, this game really does not care whether or not robots or androids can feel emotion or have individual consciousnesses. Clearly, they do okay.
Yeah, like, when I was first hearing about the video game and people were first telling me about it, one of the big things that they kept saying is it'll really make you think about what, you know, what is life, you know, what is being alive. And I kind of rolled my eyes at them because I already have pretty thought about that pretty intensely. And the game also seemed pretty heavy-handed. Like, if that's the big reveal that it was going to have, it seemed pretty heavy-handed. It seemed to just, like, obviously forego and jump to that conclusion right away. Like, obviously these robots have feelings. Like, obviously they should be considered some form of alive. And that's just in the first, playthrough. That's right there on the surface.
Yeah. And so, and you continue playing through the game and other stuff happens. Yeah. And you eventually have big showdowns, both with Adam and Eve, and you win. There's also that segment, I believe it's in the first playthrough, where some of the machine life forms, the trick is that, like, a lot of them, they want to emulate humanity or how humans act, but they still don't quite get it. For example, you've got a whole bunch of robots that want to emulate religion.
This cannot possibly end any way but good.
And what they actually decided to emulate was, like, a suicide cult.
Yep.
And
yeah, you find yourself right in the middle of Robot Jonestown. It's kind of, it's very unsettling.
And at this point, you can see a lot of stuff. I also actually really enjoyed the robots in the woods, in the forest, who are worshiping. They're doing everything for their king. But as you play through this, you realize pretty quickly that their king no longer exists, but they're still doing it for him anyways. That's also where you find, like, the secret machine, like, blacksmith, who just wants to make awesome swords for you, which is great.
Yeah, I actually did not find him right. I did not find him actually until the second playthrough.
That is actually what got me. Same thing, even though I'm pretty positive you could have found him in the first playthrough.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't actually have to find him, but he's hidden the whole time. And that's also where you meet A2, who is this mysterious other combat android. You also meet Emil, who is the Yokotara head that's running around, who gets scared and will sell you stuff eventually.
Emil is best character.
So yeah, but yeah, fight against Adam and Eve, and they're clearly, again, trying to hold... Well, Adam wants to know what the whole deal of humanity is. Eve is very much all about, you know, just wanting his older brother to play with him and interact with him. So Eve actually gets humanity at a more instinctual level than Adam ever would, but that's because Eve doesn't care.
Which I think says a lot about humanity.
yeah. And so that's sort of how the first playthrough ends, is you beat Adam, things happen, you beat up Eve, you have to kill 9S because that's sad, but that's okay. He's uploaded himself into the machines, and everything is all cool and hunky-dory, and now you get to play through it all over again. Only sorta, because now you're going to play as 9S. Once again, we are back, all our spoilers, but now this time for that second playthrough, where now you're 9S. And it starts off with this cool little moment. You play actually as a little machine robot who is trying to dump some oil onto your machine brother, so maybe your brother can come back. And then it pulls back to 9S going, ha ha ha, stupid idiot machines.
Oh, 9S.
He's mostly a good boy.
No, he's not. Like, he pretends to be, but he's not.
I mean, well, that's kind of 9S's whole deal.
That is true. He is. He's just, you know, he seems like this nice kind of innocent boy. But to be honest, at all stages of the game, he has way more idea of what's actually going on than any of the other protagonists. And what's going on is disturbing.
Let's see. So let's talk about what's going on with some of the robots. I feel like this is the appropriate playthrough to actually start explaining some of this.
Because with 9S, he lacks some of the... He definitely lacks the outright combat ability of 2B, but he has his hacking mini game of Doom.
Yeah.
which can just utterly devastate your enemies. You could actually just, like, for someone who's not supposed to be a combat model, he's weirdly, if you're good at that game, he is devastatingly effective. The also upshot of that is when you're hacking boss enemies, you get all sorts of little information you didn't know about them before.
And functionally, it's a case of, as 2B, you get a light attack and a heavy attack, whereas as 9S, you only get the light attack, but your heavy attack is now hacking, which then turns into a little twin-stick shooter, and the music suddenly goes like 8-bit in design.
It's pretty awesome.
And generally speaking, the tougher the enemy you're trying to hack, the more complex the shooter segment is.
And so now you're playing as 9S. The other trick is that 9S does know, he learns more about what's going on because he's the guy that gets to learn about all the crazy conspiracy theories that are actually real.
Yeah, he gets, one of the things that I really like is he gets to see inside the machine's head, like what's going on. Like, whereas before you walked through this entire landscape as 2B and you saw all this stuff and you're going, huh, that's weird. As 9S, you actually get to see what they're thinking. And it's not as just like insane as you think it is. Like, they actually do have reasons and stuff for it.
Oh, yeah. Like the opera singer robot who's just like, she just wanted to be beautiful.
Well, like, the whole thing with the Forest King, like, he basically had the Forest King basically had the idea of he used his parts to help repair everybody, and so everybody could still exist because he did this for him, and did this for them, and so now, like, all these robots are emotionally compelled to continue on the Forest King's legacy, even though the Forest King is gone.
Because he literally gave himself away to death.
Yes.
And so the little baby child you see at the end of it is actually, like, the last pieces they had left of it. They try to put it into this little baby robot, and they're confused as to why the baby robot isn't growing to be a new king.
Yes.
Because all they did was build a baby robot. Like, it's not, they don't quite grasp the concept that they're not human. They don't grow and evolve. They're locked into place.
Except when they do, but.
Well, it's like, you know, well, the opera singer lady who, you know, she evolves and evolves mostly because she starts eating other robots to try and become pretty.
Yeah. Yes. Eventually getting to the point of, well, what if I started wearing androids like jewelry? And it's, to be fair, some of the other robots apparently were genuinely squicked out by it, too. But yeah, they're more complex, or the, you know, the big giant wreck-your-everything robot was just really lonely. It wanted its mother.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that gigantic, like, behemoth, like,
yeah,
whale, like, super ultra mega zord, like, machine, yeah, life form.
It was like, we've seen this once before. It's the scariest thing we ever saw. We only barely turned it away. We know we didn't kill it. Now we see it again, you know? It's like, oh, good.
Like, no matter how many times you try to blow it up, it's actually still got more crap in it to kill you with.
Yeah, but, you know, it was just really lonely.
I mean, nobody would let it come near.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. Come near.
But, you know, it's like some of them are shockingly simple motivations. But, you know, you didn't get any of it in 2B's playthrough.
Well, and I think that's really the trick, is that all these, you know, machine life forms, you know, they're all, you know, basic, you know, instincts, basic, simple ideas, but they live essentially forever. And so those little ideas build up. And the other thing you learn is that, as it turns out, this has been going on for a very long time, and all these robots, even when they fail and break apart, all they can do is start that particular cycle over again. So
yeah, they can't adapt and change.
Because at the end of the day, a lot of them want to, and especially like Adam, wants to emulate, and they want to try their best to be like humans. they can't because they're not, and there are limitations.
But they keep trying. They keep trying.
They do.
Keep repeating the same mistakes over and over, which I'm not sure isn't supposed to be a condemnation of humanity, but...
Well, and you also learn at the same time that as you're going through these playthroughs that the androids have their own thing going on. Because this entire time, you think that this is a proxy war done by the humans and the aliens, and their forces are fighting for them. But at the end of the day, you discover not only are all the aliens actually dead, because in the first playthrough, you find out quickly the machine life forms were like, you aliens, you're dumb.
Oh, we don't need you. We're going to kill you. Did we find this out this soon? I thought we were saving this for the third segment. But yeah, so there aren't any aliens. The aliens apparently made one huge mistake when programming the machines, and they just said, defeat the enemy. Well, at some point, the machines decided that the aliens were the enemy. And that doesn't work out good.
Oops.
No, I'm pretty positive in the second playthrough, one of the big reveals is that humanity is also dead. Like, this is no longer a proxy war, it's just a war, but neither side is programmed to stop.
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing of there's humans on the moon, it's a lie. It's made up. If you couldn't tell by the fact that the story was humans on the moon.
Yeah. Oh, sure, they've got a little... machine there that sends messages sometimes that sure sound like the humans are rooting for the androids, but, you know, that's it. They've got a few bits of genetic information, but not even enough to actually reconstruct humans, even if they wanted to.
And the thing is that 9S is a very sophisticated model. And 9S, because he's so sophisticated, because he has such intelligence-gathering capabilities... He's always going to be able to figure this out. Like, the powers that be behind the androids know that he's eventually going to figure out everything that they've been doing and everything that's wrong.
So, let's take our last break, and then we'll come back to really get into the weeds. Okay, so we're back. All right, so the first thing is, you know, and you know, your first play through the game is 2B. Then you play through the same stuff happening, only as 9S. And so now you get little glimpses into what's actually going on. But the third playthrough is primarily with, you know, primarily 9S and A2, because you're now going through the big offensive. You beat Adam and Eve. The machine life forms should be more or less down for the count. So now is the time to really give it to them and win the war for humanity. Even though you actually know humanity's gone, but the androids don't know that yet. And while this is happening, suddenly things go really, really wrong. Like, it turns out the machine robots are not remote. They're still very much not down for the count. And something's also going on with the androids at the same time.
Yeah, it gets weird.
So the problem is, with the initial setup as it is described to you, you have been lied to. You know that you've been lied to. The problem is if you realize how many times you've been lied to. You think, oh, discovering that the aliens are already dead and that the humans are already dead, that's the big lie. No! There's even more! There's even more than that!
Yeah, especially the androids being super insistent on hiding this information, but knowing that they can't keep it hidden indefinitely, so they have to keep killing anyone who finds out. But they need those personalities, so they keep reinstalling them in new bodies.
Well, and the big thing is you discover there's like a logic virus, and you think the logic virus is initially being sent to you from the machines, who are also still doing their own thing, and they've created this crazy giganto tower of doom. But you find out it's actually the androids have decided they've realized that too many androids are going to figure it out. So they plan on just killing all the androids that are going to find out. And then that way the secret will forever be safe. But they also don't want the machines to find out where the last remnants of humanity is, because like the genome types and stuff are still being housed on the moon in a special base. And the machines are trying to destroy that one little bit left, because that's technically the end of humanity, and that's who they're supposed to program to kill.
Or at least that's what you think is going on.
Right. Like it's, well, and it could be what's going on. Like it's, and so now you've got like, you know, 2B, who unfortunately has deceased. She can't do, you know, she got hit by the logic virus, and she has 9-2 kill her, but take her 2A. Sword. So that way all her memories are preserved in the sword, yeah, with 9-2, because they're actually the same base model.
A2,
sorry.
Yeah.
But then there's 9S, who sees this, misunderstands what's going on, and has now decided he's going to kill all the machines, but he's also going to kill A2.
Very specifically also A2. Who, A2 is almost identical gameplay-wise to 2B, except instead of a self-destruct mode, she has a berserk mode that is situationally useful, but you die real fast if you screw up. But she, and you end up switching control, well, you end up picking which one you're going to control in multiple sections, although you have to play through both of the storylines to get to the finale of this arc, wherein you scale the giant tower, and the game keeps switching back and forth between who you're controlling, to the point where even it gets to be very rapidly switching you back and forth between the two.
Because at the end of the day, 9S and A2... are actually working with each other. They just, neither of them know it, because the pods, which we haven't even talked about.
Yeah, which is funny.
Oh yeah, the pods. Oh
my god! Literally, the whole story revolves around these guys, and it's like they're little helper robots for the androids, who are functionally little floating weapon pods, but they also talk back to you. And
well,
they're like your little robot butlers.
Yeah, they handle all the little grunt work of keeping track of who's calling who, and you know where you need to go, and you know it's a little snarky commentary.
You know how in Fable, like the user interface system was actually worked through the dog somehow. They're sort of like that. Like they kind of hang around, and they're kind of where the camera is, maybe sort of.
Some of the time.
Yeah.
But all the pods are in a big network with each other, and they have their own agenda.
and their primary job is to keep their androids alive. And so the pods, you know, B2's pod now hangs out with A2, and 9S has his pod. And they're talking to each other like, look, we both know that 9S wants to kill A2. So let's them have do their objectives, but let's do our best to keep them separated at all times. And for that, and they both end up going up the tower, and they're both fighting the same final boss, but they're fighting it in two different ways. And so the game is now at that point just flipping it between the two of them.
Yeah.
To this really, really awesome boss battle, because as you're playing through it and things are happening, and it's super cool. And then you get to the final moment, where suddenly you actually have to choose who you're going to play as, like, and who you're going to beat the game with, whether it's A2 or 9S.
Because, you know, the other one is the boss. Like, you have to fight one with the other. And they're actually slightly different fights, depending on which one you choose.
And this is when you find out things, like, for example, you know, depending on how which one you do, like they're either trying to shoot at the moon or the machines are actually trying to shoot past the moon, and they actually sort of want to do they actually just want to they realize that staying on Earth, all they're gonna be stuck is repeating the same thing over and over again. They've got to go somewhere else so they can actually evolve. They can actually try something new.
$10 says they end up on some other planet and go, okay, we got to build some robots to fight the race that's already here. And we'll say they have to defeat the enemy.
Or I think if you do the other one, like it is, they are trying to shoot the moon, but you stop them.
Well, there was heavy implication that the aliens never existed in the first place. You guys got that, right?
Hmm. I didn't. And now I'm asking, am I the sucker for just assuming the aliens had to have existed?
Yeah, the aliens might very well have never existed.
Like, they were just kind of an elaborate hoax kind of way, or?
Well, humanity was the aliens. Humanity made the machines, sent the machines off into space. The machines got turned around and came back.
This happened in sci-fi before.
Yeah. Like,
where... And that's not even the whole thing that the reason why humanity died actually has nothing to do with the machines anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, all the humanity died because of the first Nier game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of us have finished.
And that's why actually the characters, I think, Devolva or Delova.
Yeah. There's like these two android twins who apparently they're not them specifically, but their identical predecessors doomed humanity. And now they've been programmed to feel guilt about it forever.
Yeah.
That's just, I don't know. That's terrible, but somehow hilarious.
It's, you know, when they asked him, what is Yokotaro, what's his favorite anime? He, of course, said Evangelion. Like, that's, like.
And, of course he did.
And then, if he wanted someone else to try to do something with Nier, who would he want? And he was like, well, I don't want it for my stuff, but I would love to see the guy from the Danganronpa series create something, or Gin Urobuchi. Like, I'd love to see what happened when he would tell us a video game. Who created things like, oh, I don't know, Fate Zero and Madoka Magica.
Shows noted for their really positive upbeat endings. You don't believe me? Go watch them.
So yeah, humanity was already boned, and so the androids, all their job is to keep humanity going, but they can't. And so there's this whole elaborate scheme to be like, we'll have them send messages from the moon, but they can't know. Okay, and if it gets to the point where too much of our are going to know, we'll just kill all of us ourselves through a logic virus. Cool. But as we mentioned before, we got into this section and we had to cut it out. Like, 9S was always going to figure it out, and other people have figured it out. And if you play the game, there's a side story that you can do where you learn about this E-series, which are spy androids whose job is to infiltrate and kill dissenters.
Yeah, I thought of them more like Gestapo androids, self-policing.
Yeah, their own Android people. Secret police, yeah.
And that was one of the last major big reveals of what 2B actually is.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, it's so much. It's already so much to take in, you know, that it's a little bit predictable that the humans were never on the moon, but, like, that whole first story arc was that first little story arc that you had to play through twice was engineered by the androids as part of their keeping everything to themselves concealed. But this has happened before. This has happened several times already, where they've had to, for one reason or another, to fight the machines, they had to create a 9S model. And the problem with the 9S model is that he's too sophisticated and that he will figure it out. So you also have to bring into action a 2B model to kill him. So the entire first half of this is pretty much just the androids playing out what has already been predestined for them.
And so, yeah, you discover that the 2B model was actually a 2E model, and she never really wanted it, but she was going to have to do it. And so that's So the ending of the first playthrough, when she's like distraught, she knows this is what's bound to happen. And
she says something real cryptic at the end of that first playthrough, and I can't remember what it is, but she said something along the lines of, you know, why does it always have to turn out this way? And, you know, it always has to turn out this way because that's the way her overlords deemed it.
And everything sort of culminates at the very end when you realize the pods, and the sort of the whole overarching thing happening, are these androids and these machine life forms are all, you know, aspects of humanity. Also, that all the Yohar models, their black box cores, are actually based off of machines, life forms themselves.
Oh gosh, when did we find that out? We found that out, like, playthrough...
three.
Near the
really?
End.
Yeah, that was near the end.
Oh, okay. And
what about those, what were they? They're like the girls in the red dresses, who are like the computer program that was really in charge of everything.
I thought they were, because they looked very similar to the twins, but they were their own thing entirely.
I just liked them because their boss fight was actually, you win by making them evolve too far.
Yeah.
Their AI gets complex enough to just, like, transcend existence or something. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
But everything in it culminates into the things that should have never actually were planned to regain any sort of remote sentience are the pods.
Yeah, the pods were just disposable little helper bots.
Yep.
And our two pods, because they've had to maintain a way more constant connection with themselves, because the general network is now down, so now they're doing it themselves. They have... also now, they've grown so attached to their androids, they now want to save their androids.
Well, and this is what got me. This is what, like I said, I was not too drawn to the idea of, oh, it's going to really make you question, you know, what is, you know, can robots be alive? The game answers that very early on. Yes, robots can be some form of alive. It takes that as a foregone conclusion. And I was not really drawn into this whole melodrama that played out between 2E and 9S and A2. Like, I've seen so much Japanese melodrama in my life that I just wasn't particularly, like, super hyper attached to these characters. But then that's when the real tricky thing happened. And the pods that I had learned to just kind of ignore turned to me and said, why do you keep playing through all of this? Is it because you wanted it to end better? And even though I've also played games where the game has suddenly dropped all pretenses of being a game and starts talking to you, it still hit me super hard when this game did that.
Well, this is also happening now. Because you're now actually, the final boss of this damn video game is the credits.
Yes.
Yeah. You
are now fighting the people, like, who made the world.
You're literally fighting the creators of the game for a better ending.
Yes.
That's an incredibly hard shoot 'em up, because, again, you're having to fight the actual words that are shooting bullets at you.
I got to the first big Square Enix logo before I started getting into trouble.
It technically is possible. It technically is possible to beat the end credits without any help.
Oh, I am sure it is. I have friends that have been way, way better than shoot 'em ups than me at them. And they can do freaking amazing things with their fingers and hitting the joysticks and the buttons just right. Like, I have seen, like, living, like, athletic art, people playing shoot 'em ups.
Yeah. It's probably only, honestly, low-tier bullet hell.
So it is possible to fight through this game, to fight through the end credits of this game, which, by the way, also, at this point, you have seen those end credits multiple times. Those end credits played... every time you got through one of the endings, of which there's actually 26.
Although a lot of them are just for, you know, sequence breaking and something weird happens or you die.
Or you run away from the boss versus actually fighting the boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of them are nothing, but a lot of them are not nothing. A lot of them are things that you can stumble into. And every time that happens, they play the credits. So you've actually gotten really used to the credits by now. So when the credits start rolling and the bots decide to fight their creators, it's really powerful.
Yeah.
It's really powerful and emotional and like, ugh.
And each time you die, and you probably will, the game asks you if you want to give up.
Yeah, it asks you if you want to give up, and at first it's like nothing. After you die a couple of times, and I am not one of those people who's particularly good at the two-stick scroller, it eventually starts taunting you. Like, oh, yeah. Mean-spiritedly taunting you, too.
Like, you can't do it. This is impossible, you know.
And one of the gameplay mechanics of the game, it's especially within the 2B portion. You can find corpses on the ground of previous players, and you can either take their stuff and you can get some power for yourself, or you can also resummon them as a helper bot for a little bit. And if you die, you can actually go back to your corpse like Dark Souls and get your stuff back. Something similar happens here, where when you die in this final bullet hell thing, you know, it tells you that someone else is giving up their game to let you keep going.
Yeah. Well, at first it just asks you if you want help. At first, that's all it does. Do you want help doing this? And if you, and it won't force you to take the help, but if you do take the help, you eventually get joined by all like these other like names of bots and things that come in and start helping you. And for me, it kind of wasn't until later that I realized that those are actually people's, like, screen names.
Yeah. Like, it's people who have, other people who are playing the game. It's like their little bots kind of rushing around you to help. And then you're pretty much going to get through it. I don't know if you can fail.
You can fail. You can fail, but it gives you the option to continue and to keep pressing on.
Yeah.
Which, again, just, you know, really, like, rings that emotional, like, the phrase that got me and started making me bawl was when it asked me, do you really still think games are just games?
And that's the moment that it's fine to like Pokemon. Yeah. I don't care what idiot 17-year-old thinks it's cool to make fun of you for it. Nah, man. They didn't play near. They don't get it.
Like, games are not just games. Games are an important social construct that we willingly engage in to help each other and to have a sense of community. And oh my god, like I was not expecting it from this game. Ugh, it lulled me into a false sense of security.
And when you get through it, like the pods, they re-upload the memories of, you know, our three kids into fresh bodies, and after everything is now, you know, crashed and burned, like, there's no more, you know, things to stop them. They can now just be androids in a human lifeless world, just hang out with the animals, I guess.
Well, they can have a future, is what it is.
Yeah.
They can potentially have a future.
Sure.
Like,
will
whether
they
it
make
all
more
ends
mistakes? Probably.
Whether it all ends in tragedy again is a distinct possibility, but that's okay because at least they have the chance to have to end in tragedy.
I like to imagine they just, you know, started raising moose all day, have adventures riding on mooses.
Man, I didn't realize you could ride a moose until you mentioned it the other, you know, that one day. I was like, oh shoot, I can ride a mooses.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
I still find it kind of crazy that he was inspired with that bit from, like, a Coca-Cola, like, ad campaign. Where it was part of the Coca-Cola Small World Machines project. Where people from India and Pakistan were connected briefly via Coca-Cola vending machines. It was a feel-good marketing thing. But it also sort of connects back to, you know, the whole thing in the first Nier. Where you could sacrifice your playthrough to save a character in the game at the very end, but this time you actually sacrifice your playthrough so that somebody else can beat this horrendous bullet hell shooter segment.
Yep.
And I did it. I have no cell phone anymore.
I did too. Like, that's the thing. It's like, I kind of felt like, well, how can I not? Like, somebody else gave up their save to help me through. So I got to do the same. That's only right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a cool moment. You know, I didn't mind doing it. And now, honestly, there have been times, especially before this podcast, like, I kind of want to go back and play through this game again.
But you can't.
But I'd have to start from scratch all over again.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if I'm playing Xenoblade. I can't do it again. Knowing that my playthrough is now lost in the ether, so hopefully somebody else who's playing the Steam copy will be able to live on because I sacrificed my save file. I hope that happens.
You know, this is kind of the example of, I've seen people ask the question before, if you'd like wipe your memory of one video game or movie or something to see it again fresh, you know, this might be it.
Yeah, because it's so hard to pick it back up after you've let it delete your game.
Well, and you think about, you know, playing, you know, RPGs and things, and then you forget to save at some point, and you play through a couple of hours, and just that alone, sometimes you don't want to play through that game again because you lost your save file, or you didn't save when you should have.
Yeah.
But now you've deleted your entire playthrough. Like, and by the time you're done, this is a good 40, 50 hours of playthrough that you've done. And it's like, daggum. Daggum.
It's so heartbreaking. It's so dispiriting to try to play it again. But at the same time, you sit there and you think about it. Like, it does weigh on you. And it's just, I sometimes think about how many people died so that I could beat this game, and it made me feel so guilty when I finally put it together that, oh my god,
yep,
those were actually people. Christopheles, I love you so much. Thank you for your sacrifice.
All right, so we've been talking for a minute. Well, we'll finish up with this. What was a moment that we haven't talked about in the game that stood out to you?
I think I already talked about that. It is very rare for a video game to make me break down and cry. Like, some movies are able to do it, but I don't think a video game has. A video game has made me cry. I think Seven made me cry, but like, it's been since then that a video game made me like cry like this. But like, seriously, y'all, this game made me cry.
Well, I can't do anything to beat that. Not that I should try to beat that.
Yeah, but I definitely, my eyes were definitely watering up in that final sequence.
Like, for me, I can't say that I was getting really frustrated at it, so I was actually too frustrated at trying to beat this daggum, like, set of credits to really, you know, to for it to get to me. So, I don't know what it says that about myself, but I one of the moments that really, you know, I wasn't sure what was going to happen with it, and maybe I just didn't play through the right side quest. But if you go into the desert in one of the areas, like in the fringes, there are just a whole bunch of Emiles.
Oh,
just like
yeah, that was a like, that was a fight.
Like, where they're just like a bunch of Emiles, like a bunch of the moon faces that are just hanging out, like, and some are like, you know, the size of buildings, and they're just hanging out in the desert. And I'm like, I did all the Emile things, and so I know what they are, but nothing ever happened with them for me, but they're there. And I was like, this is very
creepy. Nothing ever happened with them for you?
No, like in the desert where there's just like a bunch of Emiles.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge boss fight.
Oh, okay. I never got that boss fight. And I never will.
And now you never will.
Oh, that just suggests there. Well, and I didn't get it either. But that just suggests there's stuff in the game you didn't stumble across.
So, all right, let's do our awesomes out of awesome. I'm just going to say a whole bunch of Emils out in the desert out of awesome.
I'm going to say so many people who died so that I could beat this game out of awesome.
Three ridiculously bangable protagonists out of awesome.
So this has been the Awesome Cast, your podcast for everything awesome. You can find us at awesomecast.com on all your podcatchers of choice. Again, please give us all the 5-star reviews wherever you can. It is super, so ultra helpful. You can find us on Patreon if you want to subscribe and throw us some cash so that way we can keep this thing running. That'd be amazing. You can find AwesomeCast on Twitter at AwesomeCast or on Facebook at AwesomeCast. You can find myself on Twitter at @itsbasaltime. Kevin's over there at @twitless_Kevin. And you can find Doug's Redbubble under Amitsu. Our theme song is done by DJ Inabito. You can find it at djinabito.com or on Twitch. He does lots of awesome retro streams. You can also find our compatriot John from the Awesome Cast, who does all awesome interviews. He does streaming under TheseRVG for These Are Video Games on Twitch. And of course, well, we have our other podcasts like, you know, Awesome Quest, which we're doing more of. We got our Final Fantasy XIV podcast, the Carbuncle Chronicle, and you can find all of that at awesomecast.com. Thank y'all for listening. Tell a friend. We hope you've enjoyed this. And until next time, we are out.
Humans on the moon. They carry a harpoon. They're alive and well, and they tell tall tales. They sing this wailing tune.